Hey there, welcome to the Three Creeks Q&A, our weekly podcast that answers your questions about last week's message. Every week in this series, you have a chance to ask questions, and we'll answer them. To submit a question, go to threecreekschurch.com or find us on Instagram and direct message us. To find out more about our church or to give online, visit threecreekschurch.com. And now, here's this week's Three Creeks Q&A.
Well, we've always talked about having a podcast.
Yeah.
I suggested a lot of good names, but you have suggested Mark and Joel.
Yeah. And my name was first, in case you missed that.
I suggested the Dad Podcast, mostly because of me, not because of you. But
yeah. It's not the best name in the world.
This is our first chance. We're in week four of Clarity. We're doing a podcast every week. Today's guest is someone that knows more about Christian rap than anyone I've ever met. And so before we even get into this, Mark, tell us more about the rap scene currently. Who should I be listening to? Should I still be getting La Crazy?
You know what's funny? If you had asked me that 2 months ago,
okay,
I would have said no. And that's not to hate on La Crazy.
He's back?
He came out with an album that is, I think it's his best album in like a decade. And he has a song with John Legend. Like there are some, it's a good album.
Okay.
So currently there's a guy called No Big Deal.
Okay.
That's all one word though. So it's N-O-B-I-G-D-Y-L. That's a little weird
D-Y-L.
When you look it up.
D-Y-L.
But he's my favorite right now. He just came out with a song with Andy Mineo called-
Andy Mineo.
Willie. It's got a lot of Will Smith puns in it, getting jiggy with it. So the song's okay. Called Willie.
Okay.
It's gold. My kids are obsessed with it. I would say you should be listening to No Big Deal, Toby Nwigwe. I know.
I've heard about him.
I know the Scots like him.
Yeah.
Toby Nwigwe, and there's a guy named Gavi, and then there's
how
another,
do you spell this?
G-A-W-V-I.
Lots of W's, lots
he's,
of E's.
He likes autotune. He's one of those guys. But okay. I would say those are the three. And then there's a guy named 1K Few. 1KPHEW. Those are some of the guys I think.
Why
you can
do
check
they
out
all?
Right now.
They make themselves unsearchable with their typing. With their.
Yeah, rap names were always terrible, and now they've gotten even worse. Like just
because they're all taken.
There's a guy. I think his name is.
Have to start respelling him.
Is it A Boogie with the Hoodie? Or like, I mean, there's some names where you're just like, what?
All right. Well, now that you've enlightened us with this, Mark Artrip, lead pastor of Movement Church, just a deep well of information as it relates to Christian rap, has always been. Actually, you were a rapper.
I was.
And you also misspelled your name.
Yes. I called myself Red with two D's. It's tough picking out a rap name, and in hindsight,
is the name Red with one D taken? Is there a rapper named Red?
There is. I think there was a Christian hardcore band. I don't know that it was taken at the time, and in hindsight, that was right before the revolution of like when Kanye West was like, "Hey, I'm gonna go by my name, Kanye West," and it changed everything forever. You just have guys going by normal names, but I didn't know.
Red. Well, can anyone search that anywhere?
I don't think so, but I'm afraid there could be an old Music MySpace
maybe,
if they look.
Maybe.
It's not Red, though. The group name was Godsound. Oh. So you gotta look up Godsound. There's probably something, unfortunately.
Okay. We need to move on quickly.
Yeah.
We are doing a podcast, and you asked a bunch of questions this week. Mark is a graduate of Grace Seminary.
It's true.
So I feel like we're going to get into some of the tougher questions that we've been asked so far. And I'm just going to play the first one and let you have a go. Oh, real quick, before I go. The Astros.
Yeah.
Somebody is going to buy me a burrito because I'm wearing this. So my torso is essentially for sale. I'll wear anything for a free burrito.
Okay, if you had on like any other team in baseball, I would think like, oh, that person just must like their team.
Are you trying to say they cheated?
Yeah, I feel like the fact that they're having you wear this is part of the like public spin damage control tour where they're like, hey, let's pretend the Astros are still good people. Like they're... Have you seen how many people have thrown at their batters this year? I mean, the whole league is trying to hit them.
I'm trying to honor them and honor my sponsor right now. Do you think that is it Jose Altuve? I think is his name.
I guess. I truthfully don't really watch and care about baseball, but
when he rounded third and was like, don't take off my shirt. He like held his shirt like this. Do you think he had a buzzer on? Because he went straight to the locker room, put on his championship t-shirt after he hit the game-winning home run.
I don't know about that, but I definitely like...
He said he didn't want to show his chest to the world.
I think they were just doing the bang on the trash can, tell him the pitch that's coming, and that's enough. I
mean, if you there wasn't buzzers.
I don't know. That'd be pretty deep. I wouldn't put it past him, because let's be honest, it's an all-time cheating scandal. They're the modern-day Chicago Black Sox, but...
That's enough about my sponsor. Thanks for the burrito.
Shout out to Nolan Ryan, the greatest Astros player of all time.
In 1995, on my Sega Genesis, that's who you wanted on the mound.
Yeah.
You wanted Nolan Ryan. All right. Enough banter. Question number one.
Based on Matthew 5:17, how are we as Christians today supposed to interpret old laws?
Yeah, well, the first thing I did, I looked up Matthew 5:17 because I thought, if I can't quote that, I could get in a lot of trouble here. I don't even know what that verse says off the top of my head. So it's Jesus saying, do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them.
Yep.
So, whenever I'm thinking of the law, I always heard the law reveals our sinfulness and God's holiness. That was the purpose of the law. Obviously, the law we associate more with Old Testament era and just the different, rules and things that God established between himself and Israel, where he said, I need you to fulfill these. This is what it looks like to have a relationship with me. And so the purpose of the law is not to point out, hey, Mark, you're a terrible person. You're a sinner. Hey, Israel, you dropped the ball again. The purpose was to always, by knowing that we can't fulfill the law, it always pushes us to the gospel and pushes us to the need for Jesus, which is why it's so important to look at the Old Testament and the New Testament together. One flows into the other and kind of shows us we can't fulfill the law, but Jesus can, and that's why God sent him. That's why we need him.
Yep.
That's why we're dependent on him. And so the law shows us God's character and how far apart we are, how much we fall short, which would be terrible if we just had the Old Testament. It'd be like, hey, you're not good enough. See you later. But then God says, all right, I'm sending Jesus. He's the completion of the law. He's the perfection of the law. He's fulfilling the law, and that changes everything,
And so. when he's saying that in Matthew 5, it's right in the middle of the Sermon on the Mount, which is where he's essentially telling all of these, law abiding Jews, like, hey, you've heard it said, like, don't murder anybody. But I'm saying you're not even really, it's wrong and disobedient to even get angry to somebody. So really Jesus in some sense comes and says, like, a lot of the rules about how to like dissect a pigeon for the sacrifice, like, you no longer have to show your love to God through that. Instead, he kind of raises the bar and gets at the heart and less about the actions of the law. Yeah. And one more thought too, is that kind of like what you said, but like three verses later in Matthew, it says, Jesus says, I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees, and the Pharisees are good at it. I mean, they're still good at it. Like, I went to Israel. You were supposed to go to Israel.
I was. Thanks for bringing that up. COVID robbed my sabbatical.
Next year. And maybe 3 years.
Maybe never.
But the Pharisees and people that are devout Jews now that don't believe that Jesus was the Messiah, they're still following a lot of these laws.
Yeah.
And they're really good at it. And Jesus says, unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers, you will not enter heaven. So I read that and go, what does Jesus even mean right there?
Yeah.
Well, Paul describes it later, and when he says in Philippians 3, like, that he's found in Christ, and he doesn't have a righteousness of his own, but one that comes through faith in Christ, the righteousness from God that depends only on faith. So essentially, like what you said, like, we can't do it, so we have to claim someone else's righteousness on our behalf.
Yeah.
And that's Jesus.
And that's, we see the Old Testament was the era of the Old Covenant. God said, you're going to be my people. There's this system, there's laws, there'll be sacrifices, sin will be atoned for. And, Jesus ushered in and became and was the new covenant. I uh,
I looked up a passage in Hebrews this week. I was like, oh, there's a passage in Hebrews. I want to, it talks about the new covenant. And in my Bible, I just write things at the top of the page. So I was looking for the words new covenant because I actually wrote, well, I actually have written that four times in Hebrews. I mean, it talks about it over and over again. Yeah. It's like chapter 7, chapter 8, chapter 9, chapter, you know, just all these different things. And so it just says like the law has been fulfilled. We're clean. We're cleansed.
Right.
We're spirit filled. Everything that those old hurdles and laws that people were jumping, it's done, it's finished, and Jesus is that new covenant. So, you know, how should we view those laws? I do think, you know, I think it's specifically the Ten Commandments. I've talked to people that are like, oh, the Ten Commandments don't apply anymore because Jesus is the new covenant. I'm like, well, no, those things are still sin. It just, the difference is that sin is paid for. We don't have to sacrifice a pigeon anymore.
Right.
We, you know, Jesus was a one-time sacrifice, but murdering someone is still a problem. So how should we view those laws? I mean, there's different kinds of laws. Some of them are ceremonial ritual. Some of them are moral laws. Murder is written on the conscience of everyone from the moment they're alive. And so there's some laws that would still apply and would still be sin. The difference is how they're atoned for, how they're paid for.
Right.
What kind of idolatry do you see in the modern church?
Can I edit that question?
Sure.
I think a better question might be, what kind of idolatry do you not see in the modern church? I mean, lots of things. We can probably do a whole podcast on this.
So are you thinking more like in terms of like idols that individual people in church have, or like idols that a church has?
Both. Yes. I mean, I was thinking of it more individuals who make up the church, but I think I also think corporately. I mean, probably any idol that you would attach in that conversation to an individual, I bet you can find it at church too. Yeah. I mean, churches are made up of people, and leadership groups are made up of people, and they have the same patterns of sin and mistake.
Let me just put you on the spot. Maybe you've prepared for this, maybe you haven't, but when you think about your church, our church, really a very similar demographic, people that, what I would say would be people that like have this longing to follow Jesus, but the world is just constantly nipping at their heels. And so they're making progress. And then it's like, but they're still making decisions that are disobedient. So there's this grind to a lot of this, the walk with Jesus, a lot of the people in my church. So what would you say are maybe a few common idols in people's lives in our church that people are having a hard time ditching?
I mean, I think a huge one is people are addicted. They're workaholics.
Yeah.
And you know, I think historically, traditionally, people are like, oh, that's something men struggle with. And I've recently in my church had several conversations with women who are saying, this is affecting my ability to come home and unplug and be a wife. This is affecting my ability to interact with my kids. This is affecting my anxiety. I mean, I think achievement can be good, and we all want to be successful. We all have drive, and yet, you know, I'd say being a workaholic is one. I think image is a huge one.
Yeah.
As a guy who was making jokes, is my bald head shiny before we started recording this? What is that?
It's a piece of paper.
Yeah.
It'll just like take the oils off your skin.
Would you agree that most importantly, I'm going up here than my face? We all think about ourselves, and we all think about how we look, how we're perceived. And so that can be your how people perceive you, or it could literally be your looks. I mean, I am regularly blown away. People are like, hey, we're having a... what's the stuff you get injected so you don't have wrinkles?
Botox.
The amount of Botox parties that are going on in Hilliard for soccer moms, like of people I know, and you know, I don't mean to like just trash that. I grew up in the country where like, you know, soccer moms were baling hay after soccer practice because they had to help their farmer husbands, you know? So like to think of like, oh, that's the best thing we have to do is pay to inject chemicals into our face. Like it reminds me just, you know, that people are willing to go to great lengths, you know, to look good and feel good. And, you know, so that's one. I mean, I think that ties into sex is another huge one. And I don't think that, you know, sometimes people think like, oh, that's for high school, college kids. That's for people that aren't married. It's like, no, sex and sexual desire is an all-time lifelong struggle idol for people.
Yeah.
I think romance is one. You know, people who are constantly wanting to pursue someone, wanting to be chased, wanting to be loved, broke up with this person, I'm dating this person, engaged with this person, not dating this person, going to get married to this person. And even what we see in culture of people finding a spouse, finding another spouse, finding it, you know, I heard it said the other day of someone's like, yeah, they don't like to be alone. Yeah. And you know, no one likes to be alone. So I don't want to mock that, but I just mean people are constantly looking to fall in love.
It's crazy because everything that you said work, you said essentially health or image.
Yeah.
You said sex and you said marriage and or relationship, romance.
And let me add one to that.
Yes.
Money.
Okay. All five of them. Gift from God.
Yeah.
Twisted. Idol that grabs our heart. You know what I'm saying? Like they're all good things when they don't have us, but when we have them, right? Like Maya, one of my, you know, best friends, he would always say like, it's okay to have it. It's just not okay for it to have you.
Yeah.
And as soon as it becomes something that you cannot be joyful without, it's an idol.
Yeah.
So as you look at the church, like I actually interpreted the question more like what idols does the church have? And it's like, wow, there's a lot of them there too.
Yeah.
Again, none of them bad. Building, good. Comfortable chairs, good. Coffee, good. Right? Kids ministry, good. Good, good, good. The minute that you would just get off your game if it was taken away from you.
Yeah.
If it's a program or a style or a song or a leader, a person. I mean, that's, the American that's church is one. Like rampant with literally walking flesh and bone idols like if that pastor leaves, I'm out.
Yeah.
Idol.
Yeah.
Idol. And probably some of the pastor's fault. Maybe he created that for himself. Yeah. But as soon as it becomes something that you cannot go on easily without, then idolatrous features at least.
Yeah.
I
can make something good a God thing.
There you go.
Boom.
Question number three. Here we go.
It seems like Pharaoh never really had a fair share to obey God because God hardened his heart. Thoughts?
It's a loaded question. Did a little digging, a little research. Okay. I'm a child of the 80s. And so I grew up on the NIV Bible. Like that's just...
Me too.
That's just what churches did. That's what you had. That's what you... We try to be a...
I was even frustrated when they came out with a new version of the NIV.
Yeah.
Because all my like go-to verses that don't I memorized as a kid, they changed a word
that's
or two.
That's only the online. I'm still rolling with like a 20 and 30 year old Bible that I'm reading. That's like the 1978 version, which, you know, whatever. But I memorize verses that way. That's what I read. That's what I study personally. I read out loud the NLT on Sundays, but like in my 1980s heart of hearts, I have an NIV guy. And as I dug for that, there was actually a lot of stuff about this passage. The Bible Project has some good stuff, but they talked about the fact that the Hebrew word, the Hebrew phrasing for this is not passive, if that makes any sense. It's a state of tense verb. And so, the original language in every other translation other than the NIV doesn't say whether Pharaoh or God hardened his heart. It doesn't indicate who initiated that action. And so only the NIV would phrase it that way. And for better or worse, the NIV is still kind of known in America. It's in our minds. It's in, you know, it's what people say. Right. And so some translations insert a passive verb, you know, and make like this, the NIV, that make you think that God hardened his heart. But most other translations would phrase it completely different. And even if you read this story, it's, you know, is there like 10 times that it says his heart was hardened or God hardened his heart? So it's like six out of the 10, the hardening of his heart happens by his own will. I think it's like one through five and seven.
Frogs through hail.
Yeah. One through five and seven. And then like, you know, six, eight, nine, and 10. It just says his heart was hard. So even in this story, there's a differentiation of language and the, you know, the pattern changes. But I think the point is, I don't know that we can say, you know, that God hardened his heart. I mean, I think the greater question would be like that, even the way that the question's worded, I'm not attacking the person. It seems like Pharaoh never really had a fair share to obey God because God hardened his heart. To assume that Pharaoh or any human deserves a fair share is already starting with some direction.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that, you know, we're all sinners. We all fall short of the glory of God. Right. Does any human deserve what you know, to say that someone didn't get a fair share is almost to attack or assume that God isn't already sovereign and God doesn't have the ability to do what he wants. And so, you know, that goes against our like American thought where we're like, I deserve this. I have this identity. Right. I want control. Okay. And it's not, so I think you could ask that in some language ways, but you could also, you know, God has every right to do what he wants. So I'm not saying he hardened Pharaoh's heart, but that's literally, it's what makes him God. Like, let's say he did for the sake of the argument.
You know? I do read stories at times in the Bible and go, gosh, it just doesn't seem fair. And then I have this question go in my mind when I think about that. And I go, man, am I sure that I want to put my eternity based on fairness? That would be a bad deal for me.
Well, and based on your definition of fairness.
Right. It's like, that's not how I want to like put myself before God is, God, please be fair, because fair doesn't work out well for me, right? Yeah. It actually, you know, as you say that too, and you say, look, NIV, ESV, we talked about this a few podcasts ago about there's different versions of the Bible, and there's word for word, there's thought for thought, and then there's like a free translation, which is like paragraph for paragraph, essentially. And I think this is a great example as to why being familiar with a couple different versions of the Bible could be helpful. You know, if you have a theological question that you're kind of pulling from one statement or one verse, then compare it against some other versions of the Bible and just see. I mean, the NIV, I might get in trouble for this. The NIV is not the inerrant, infallible, like every, I don't know.
It has pluses and it has minuses. Yes. There are pluses for why you would go word for word. There are pluses why you would go thought for thought. Why you would go like, and yeah, that's not bad, but I think it's a great reason that we have YouVersion now, you know. Used to be, you're like, oh, I wanted to read that. You know, you maybe had someone who had the parallel Bible and four translations, but used to be, you'd have to have like a bookshelf. You couldn't go to Starbucks and read six translations. But once you're in that verse in YouVersion, you can read the ESV, the NASB, the NIV, and the NLT. Right. In 30 seconds.
And the warning in it would be like, okay, don't make a theological belief decision based on one verse or one phrase of a, without looking at a lot of different translations
Do your homework.
Do your homework.
But I think even beyond that with the phrasing, I mean, I wrote this down. The principle is there because I think we see it different ways and we know the story of, you know, I wrote this. God called Pharaoh to humble himself and acknowledge that God is his authority and that he cannot redefine good and evil on Egyptian terms or on his own terms. And so regardless, the point is Pharaoh had some opportunities to say, hey, I'm not God, but God is.
Yeah.
He didn't do it. And so, you know, this question kind of already starts us down a path of like, man, was God fair to this guy? And it's like, I think God's been fair to just about everybody. They're without a fault. They can say, hey, I had a shot and I didn't take it.
Right. Cool. Okay. Question four.
How did the Israelites walk around in the desert for 40 years and their sandals not wear out?
All right. So full transparency, I actually put that question in there.
Okay, good. I was embarrassed for your church if they ask this. But
No. Yeah. I put that question in there because I
have a passion for sandals.
Yes, okay. Big sandals guy.
Had
Doc Martens in eighth grade. The I remember going. It's beside the point, I guess. But I guess in eighth grade, I remember going to a party in Old Navy jeans with the little hook for my hammer.
Yep,
and carpenter orange, jeans. Bright orange Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah,
and like the sandals, it almost looks like a basket over your foot.
Yeah.
And the soles were like an inch and a half thick.
Lady,
I just got back
killer.
From Africa.
Yeah.
I thought all of those things like by themselves were kind of cool. And I put them together and I still get embarrassed. Okay.
Yeah.
So big sandals guy. How did the sandals of the Israelites not wear out for 40 years? So I brought that up because I think there's a lot of questions like, okay, wait a minute. They were 900 years old. Okay, wait a minute. Every animal, what about the food? You know, like how do you store the food on the ark? Wait a minute. They were all speaking the same language and building a tower to heaven?
Yeah.
And you just read through, wait a minute. The Red Sea split? Like was there an earthquake? Yeah. You know, or did it just
It's not a normal Tuesday.
Yeah. So I heard this story and I thought it was, I thought it applies to this. There's a guy named Dr. Donald Barnhouse in Philadelphia. He was hosting a Sunday night Q&A about the Bible. And there was just one microphone with the Bible, and people just come up to this microphone and ask him questions, then he would come up and answer them. And a young man stood up and says, "Dr. Barnhouse, could you explain to me how the Israelites could walk for 40 years in the desert and their sandals not wear out?" And Dr. Barnhouse was known to have a, the story goes that Dr. Barnhouse was known to have a voice like the fourth member of the Trinity. Hmm. And he bellowed in the microphone, "God." And the young man, like, goes, "Oh, okay, thank you." And he goes, "No, you don't understand." And the point of the whole story is, like, we can't understand all of this stuff.
Yeah.
And when I look at it and go, wait, how many children did they have? Like,
yeah.
Those are some childbearing hips. I mean, they all had, like, 14, 20, yeah. 30 children. Yeah. And you go, wait a minute. Like, logistically, as an investigator, I'm like, how did that happen?
But I think we do that every day too. I mean, I had a conversation with someone last night. How do the stars stay in the sky?
Yeah.
Like it's not just, oh, there were these crazy things back in the Bible. Yeah. How did a fish swallow a human? We look at things God does every day, from childbirth to the clouds. And we're like, yeah, that's just, it's like
the earth.
We don't fathom the things that God is holding together and has put in place.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, you could say that for things that we see every day, let alone Old Testament occurrences.
Like, if they read a story about how cells work now,
they would be like, what?
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, if they're like, here's how you do a Zoom meeting with people on four continents. You're like, what?
Seriously, though. Like, I bet you our world blows their mind more than they're in heaven going, huh? Like, that just...
Yeah.
Anyways, point being, like, as you read these, and if you're just so literal and so investigative and you have to know all the answers, like, you're never going to know them. Day one, that's frustrating. But, like, maybe if you come to that realization and go, like, this stuff, my mind can't get it. Yeah. Maybe that's actually freeing. And your faith can grow when you go, God's bigger than this. He's bigger than me. It's so awesome. Maybe they switched out sandals. Maybe they didn't. Bread and birds are like falling into their laps.
Yeah.
So God can do anything.
Yeah. Someone shared a quote with me one time, a God that can be fathomed is no God at all. And I love that because, I think there is comfort and hope in the mystery of not being able to wrap my human mind around God. And if I could... That doesn't sound like someone I want to follow.
Yeah. Okay. Last one, question number 5.
After all those years, Moses doesn't get to enter into the promised land. That seems like a raw deal. Your thoughts?
So Pharaoh gets a raw deal, and now Moses gets a raw deal.
Some of these questions, and it's fine, they're great, but I do think they come with a little agenda. Like, part of me wanted to answer that with, like, biblical truth, and I've got some verses, but my honest first thought was Moses got to talk to and see and communicate with God and died in relationship with him. That's not a bad life. Like, tell me, you know, the promised land, I guess they always said, was flowing with milk and honey, but Moses got to talk to God. There's no way milk and honey is better than talk.
Right.
I look at his life and I'm like, there was no raw deal. Like, If you were to stack up, the all Bible first team, the MVPs of our faith, I think most people would say, like, David, Paul, Moses. I mean, he's respected.
Jonah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, came out of a fish. No, yeah,
definitely.
Oh,
not,
yeah, yeah. Definitely not Jonah. Yeah.
I mean,
cool story, but not a hero.
But I think most people, you know, I would say that Moses didn't get a raw deal. And I would say that even if you take away the spiritual aspect of that, I mean, I think he's revered and goes down as someone that God used and someone that people respect and is majorly used to shape the narrative of the whole Bible. But I also think, kind of in the same way we answered the last question, if we were going to assume that his life wasn't good and he got a raw deal, to assume that any human deserves anything other than what's coming to them, which is death and separation from God because of their sin, like, is to take some poetic license. I mean, we like control and we like this American narrative of fairness. But I mean, I'm thinking like, what did Moses deserve? I mean, you think of like all the times that, I mean, Moses killed someone. Let's talk about that. He was a murderer. Right. There was another time in his life, you know, like God would be like, hey, whatever you do, don't strike the rock. And he's like, hey, let's go strike that rock. Right. I mean, even when he did that,
isn't that why?
That's the ultimate offense. That's what I'm saying. That's the moment. Out. And right. And God said, like, you took credit and stole glory that belonged to me. And so you will not enter the promised land. I mean, and some people might be like, geez, all that for striking a rock. But to steal the glory, we know God, we have a relationship with God. He had been in the presence of God and spoken to God and still was able to steal God's glory. And so there's some things there where you're like, I don't know I don't think that's a raw deal. The fact that God didn't like kill him or smite him with hemorrhoids on the spot might actually be pretty fair. Like he probably should have gotten something even worse, you know? Yeah. And so I would say, I think the dude had a great life.
Yeah.
And you know, the promised land wasn't perfect. I mean, God even said when he sent him into the promised land, he's like, hey, you're going to go take these houses that you didn't build. You're going to go into this land that you don't deserve. And you're going to sin and still turn your backs on me. You know, the promised land, it's not like it was just like Willy Wonka's chocolate factory. Like it still had sin and problems. And so I don't think it was any better than what Moses experienced already being in relationship in the presence of God.
Right. It's good. I had two quick thoughts on that question. The first would be, you know, celebrity Christians don't get like a different break from God, right? So like you see God dealing harshly, frankly, with a lot of the disobedience all through the beginning of the Bible. And it's not like Moses, you know, hey, you did really good for most of it. So we're going to give you, I'm going to overlook it.
You're also going to write the first couple books. So we're going to give you a bump.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, wait a minute. No, in fact, God just deals with sin across the board as sin. And that brings me to the second observation I have is that like God never has and never will take sin casually.
Yeah.
He doesn't go, oh, it's okay. You know, it's okay. Like it needs to be dealt with and it needs to be punished and you are guilty. And so I think for myself, I've even reflected and go like, what sin do I have in my life that I just go, well, it's just kind of who I am. Like, you know, I think of selfishness or anxiety or gluttonous behavior or just different things that I go, I mean, it's not that big of a deal. I guess I'm a sinner, so whatever. Yeah. Like, God doesn't deal with any sin ever casually. He's very serious about disobedience.
When we know the character of God, sin is against the character of God.
Right.
And so they're in direct and complete opposition. And so I think when we're submitting to God, we're saying, am I letting him disagree with and correct and will I let him flush this sin out of my life?
Yeah.
And because it has to be done. He can't be around sin. He can't be in the presence of sin. And so if we're going to be in his presence, sin's got to go.
Right. Right. Cool. Well, that's week four, the Exodus era of the Bible. Mm-hmm. Actually, next week in the conquest era of the Bible, we're going to see again how God does not take sin casually. And it's almost like if you read the book of Joshua, which is the conquest era, which is coming up this weekend, it's sickening. It hurts to read it because you go like, wait, like God takes sin really seriously. He's not messing around. I mean, it's what separates us from him. And it actually led him to the point where he sent his son to die for us so that we wouldn't have to have it. Like it's a big deal to him. So anyways, beside the point. Mark,
thank you so much for having me.
Dude, thanks for coming.
Good to be here.
An elder of our church, a good friend of mine, a pastor of Movement Church, a Christian rap enthusiast, father of four.
Husband.
And father of four. That's good. It's good to include that, especially when you're talking about Old Testament. They were married to a couple different people.
Yeah. Husband of one wife. Probably, I was lucky to get one.
This has been week four. Thanks. Send in questions for the next time. We love it. See you later.
Thanks for listening. We hope this provided even more clarity as you desire to see God's story, your story, and how they fit together. If you're going through this series alone, you're missing out. We have small groups of people going through this series together, and we'd love for you to join one. To connect with other people, visit 3creekschurch.com to find a community group near you.